This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Tomczyk, sitting in for Mike Collins. North Carolina and the rest of the country are slowly climbing out of the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. The depth and severity of that downturn have created problems not seen in decades. And one of the biggest ones that started during the recession and has lingered into the recovery is long-term unemployment. It takes the average unemployed person more than 9 months to find a job. That's about twice as long as the average job search took in every previous recession and recovery of the past 60 years. And although the unemployment rate is slowly improving, the number of long-term unemployed people remains historically high. There are thousands of people in the Charlotte area struggling with this problem, and we'll talk to one of them later this hour. We'll also speak with two people trying to address the problem locally. But first, we're joined over the phone by U.S. Senator Kay Hagan, a Democrat from North Carolina who's up for re-election next year. Senator Hagan has introduced the America Works Act. Senator Hagan, thanks for your time.
It is my honor, and I am so pleased that you're conducting this this discussion on helping people find jobs.
Well, on that point, where does this problem rank, especially long-term unemployment? Where does this rank as a priority for you and your fellow members of Congress?
For me, it is my top priority. Jobs, jobs, jobs. We've got to be sure we can do everything possible to help create a better business climate so that small businesses can grow and hire more people. And in North Carolina, we've had a long problem with this because of the loss of manufacturing jobs before this recession hit in 2008-2009. So, you know, the jobs report came out today. 175,000 new jobs people were employed around the country. But in North Carolina, our unemployment rate is still around 8.9%, which is considerably higher than the national average. So I know this is a serious issue here in our state.
And you mentioned manufacturing. I know that one of the things that the America Works Act aims to do is help fill some openings in, say, skilled manufacturing jobs. How would this act that you have introduced in the Senate address, you know, this problem for people who have been out of work for a long time?
The America Works Act, it's a common sense bill that's going to help address the skills gap that we have right now. You know, we've got thousands of jobs available in North Carolina, but in many cases, there's a gap between the skills that are necessary for those jobs and then the people who are applying for those jobs without those skills. So what this bill does, the America Works Act, it's bipartisan, first of all. You know, that's all too rare these days, and this is just the kind of common sense bill that can bring Democrats and Republicans together. It doesn't add a dime to the deficit, and it's modeled around incredibly successful job training programs that we have at about 8 of our community colleges across North Carolina. This act creates a portable, which means it can move across state lines, industry-recognized credentials that will ensure that workers have the training needed to fill the jobs that are available right now. Let me give you a couple of examples. Right now, welding jobs are in great demand. People with those skill sets. What this bill would do, it would allow our community colleges to have different programs so that somebody who's unemployed goes back to our community colleges, gets the training in different types of welding. They would actually get a credential that they would present to an employer to say, I'm trained to do this kind of job. And that, I think, is the kind of area where we need to look at these portable credentials. And it's not just in welding. It's in many different other areas. A lot of metal fabrication, automotive, computers, printing, the wood business, many of these areas. And I think that would really help people get the jobs that are available today.
Well, let me ask this. I mean, I know that this act has been in committee since early March. So, I mean, how soon could unemployed people see results from it or from other congressional actions?
Well, I'm hoping that we can get this done between now and August, the end of the year. I think this is such a good bill, and the fact that it's straightforward. It asks industries, including construction, biotechnology, aerospace, to really determine the skill sets that they need, and then our community colleges and job training centers will develop the curricula for these nationally recognized portable credentials based on those skills. And I am hoping the fact that this is already a bipartisan bill. We have Republican Heller from Nevada. We have Joe Donnelly from Indiana that are original co-sponsors of this bill. And, you know, in this economy, no family should struggle to make ends meet while employers are struggling to fill open jobs. I'm going to be working with my colleagues this year to advance this important common sense jobs bill in Congress.
Senator Hagan, I know you have somewhere else you need to be. Do you have time for another question?
Certainly.
So some of the long-term unemployed people in our community come from, say, the banking or the energy industry. How would this approach help people like them who maybe don't want to start a brand new career in say, manufacturing or welding?
Well, you know, if they've got different skill sets in the financial industry area, there's lots of different ways. I think people ought to go to their Chamber of Commerce. They need to go to their community colleges. They need to go to the workforce development training centers within our state and look at the jobs, discuss these with the recruiters at those facilities, and look at if there are other job openings. One of the things I want people to realize is not to give up. I think the economy is definitely improving, and North Carolina is certainly a great place to do business. I talk to CEOs from around the country all the time. They like the business climate in North Carolina. They like our workforce. We have people who really want to go to work. The work ethic here in North Carolina is extremely strong, and they also like our weather, our climate. So I think we will continue to see North Carolina grow, but I am very concerned about doing all we can to put people back to work. And I think becoming an entrepreneur is something people ought to consider too. And the Small Business Administration, the SBA, which has a big presence in North Carolina, is another avenue that people ought to consider talking to the SBA if they want to look at borrowing money to actually help establish a small business.
Well, U.S. Senator Kay Hagan from North Carolina, thank you so much for carving out some time for us this morning.
Well, I'm pleased that hour-long session is going on, and I look forward to hearing it. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you. Joining me in the studio now is Kelly Cochran. She works with unemployed people in our area on a daily basis in her role with Central Piedmont Community College. The school has a program called Recareering Services, and Kelly is the senior career coach. Kelly, welcome.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you.
And also in the studio is Steve Partridge. He's the CEO of Charlotte Works, a public-private partnership that matches employers and job seekers. It grew out of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Workforce Development Board. Steve, welcome to you, too.
Thank you.
So I want to revisit some of what Senator Hagan said in a minute, but first let's describe the size of this problem in our area. Steve, how many people have come through Charlotte Works, and how long do they tend to be unemployed?
Well, it's a hard thing to quantify. You know, the number of clients we've seen in the past 9 months is around 14,000. 14,000, and
wow.
Our footprint is just Mecklenburg County. So it's a growing problem, even though it is improving the economy. We're still seeing a lot of people that need help in figuring out how to get back to work.
And I guess what would the range be of, I mean, do some people come in and can find jobs within a month or two, and then do some carry on past years, I suppose?
Yeah, you know, the trends have changed a lot. You know, 5 years ago, you saw the largest group of unemployed usually 15 weeks or less. You know, they lost their job, they quickly got back to work, but now the largest group is the 26 weeks or more group. And that's approaching, you know, statewide for the last time. I think 2011 is the last full year of data we have, was almost 45%. Of the unemployed in the state were 26 weeks or more. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, exactly. And just for listeners who are unfamiliar with the exact definitions, 27 weeks or longer is the definition of long-term unemployment federally, and that's about 7 months. I mean, you know, clearly we don't translate weeks to months too often, but that's about the mark there. Kelly, as far as recareering services, I mean, what have you guys been seeing?
Well, over the last 2 years, 3 years since our services have been available, we do more hands-on individualized service that takes a little bit longer. We have seen close to 2,000 employees or displaced workers come through our center, and about 500 of those in the last year. We are working with them again in groups of hours and workshops and kind of on an ongoing basis.
But it's a lot of one-on-one stuff as
a lot
well,
of one-on-one in our model, yes. And we have seen people consistently even now who have been out of work for at least 2 years. It's not uncommon to see people who have a 3 or 4 year unemployment tenure behind them.
And could both of you guys tell me a little bit, too, about, you know, what are some examples of some of the folks' backgrounds who come through? I mean, what kind of industries do they come from? What kind of, you know, how long have their careers been?
You know, it's really across the board, but some of the folks that we see in that long-term category really are highly skilled individuals, a lot of them from the financial service background. They have project experience. These are people in good times that didn't struggle in the past to find jobs. And now that the economy is a little tighter and you've got hundreds of people applying for open positions, they just don't stand out like they used to. They look like everyone else in the group, and that's the challenge. And to Kelly's point, it's a lot more hands-on services that are necessary now to help people. I think it used to be 5 years ago a lot more self-service. Give people computers, websites, links, and just kind of point in the right direction they could find work. Now, getting our career coaches, workshops, a lot more intensity of what is needed to help people.
And Kelly, I guess, would you add as far as, you know, the types of backgrounds that you've seen as you're working with people?
A lot of people in financial services sectors, especially, of course, during the first years. In 2009 and 10, we were seeing on average 350 people a year coming in, many of them from that sector. But as Senator Hagan pointed out, one of the underrepresented sectors of unemployment in this state has been the manufacturing industry. We've seen a number of folks from a wide array of manufacturing, specifically middle management. But we've also seen people come through from telecom backgrounds, education, even healthcare, retail, just the wide gamut. And to speak to the education levels, two-thirds of our employees, our displaced workers who've sought out our services have at least a four-year degree. Mm. And of that number, a third of those have advanced degrees. So it really puts a spotlight on the nature of the unemployed or underemployed worker these days. These are not unskilled workers.
Right, we have this huge swath, I guess, of bachelor's and master's degrees in our area.
Indeed.
So Steve, a big part of what Charlotte Works does is work with employers to find out what they need. How much do you think something like Senator Hagan's America Works Act would help people get back to work?
I think it would standardize an approach across the nation. I think that's really critical. You know, there were workforce boards all around the country, community colleges, but how they work with employers differs. I'd say here in Charlotte, with CPCC, Charlotte Works, and a lot of other partners around the table, we've really created some unique partnerships. So I don't think it would change the way we do business or really enhance what we do a lot more, because we already are working very closely with industry like Siemens and other companies to get the kind of credentialing and train to suit their needs. What I think the follow-up piece, and the senator didn't have time to touch on it, is, you know, WIA, which is how the workforce system is funded across the country, is up for reauthorization this year.
And that's a federal?
It's a federally funded program. And what that does is sort of provide the backbone to what a lot of what the America Works Act would use to pay for a lot of these changes. And I think on-the-job training, which is a key component where we use the federal dollars to subsidize the wages while someone learns on the job. So they come in often with some very good skills. They come in maybe with some new credentials, but what they lack a lot of times is the experience. And that experience is critical, because if you're looking for an ideal candidate, you want someone that maybe has done the job already. And if you're switching industries or been out of work a while, how do you get that experience? And internships are one ways, but on-the-job training is one opportunity for us to subsidize the employee's wages. So if the employer's taking a risk on someone, they're thinking, yeah, they're 70% of what I want, but they're not the ideal candidate. This sort of mitigates that risk in tough times. So hopefully we'll see more of that type of program being pushed to the federal level.
And about how many employers, roughly, have you guys worked with?
We've worked with about 400 employers since July of last year. And that's critical intel, because a lot of times, you know, we say we're training to what employers need, and what happens a lot of times, we're training to maybe what one employer needs, not an industry. And so if we're going to really get this industry certification, we need the industry to carve out time, come together, and really help us understand what their needs are, and making sure it's not just employer specific.
Okay, we're going to need to take a short break here. Afterward, we're going to get back to some ways that this act could help. And then we're also going to hear the story of a single mother who's coming off a successful career and who's now searching for a job. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Eceola Lodge at Linville Golf Club, featuring local fresh cuisine, a Donald Ross Championship golf course, fly fishing, and spa. Located off the Blue Ridge Parkway, information eceola.com. And Founders Federal Credit Union, an innovative credit union with 24 offices across the Carolinas and over 90 ATMs in its network. Information available at foundersfcu.com. Last year in North Carolina, there were more than 21,000 reports of elder abuse or neglect. Abuse can be physical, emotional, or financial, and it's happening around the country. Many elderly adults are abused in their own homes, in relatives' homes, and even in facilities responsible for their care. Governor McCrory has declared this Vulnerable and Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and so we'll look into the problem when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The Obama administration secretly collects millions of phone records from Verizon. The president names two women to key national security posts, and the May jobs report.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks. On listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk, sitting in for Mike Collins. Today we're discussing long-term unemployment in the Charlotte area. We've been talking to Kelly Cochran, senior career coach at CPCC's Recareering Services, and Steve Partridge, CEO of Charlotte Works. We're going to bring another person to this conversation in just a minute. But first of all, Steve, I wanted to follow up on something Senator Hagan said. She mentioned that there are all of these jobs that are open that are skilled, say, manufacturing jobs. How many of those are in our area? I mean, are you hearing about these openings?
Yeah, we work with a lot of manufacturers. And they tell us they cannot find a lot of those skilled workers I think the senator is referring to, the machinists, the welders, the CNC operators. And so in working with them, it's hard to quantify the number because a lot of times we're looking at online data, job postings, and that's how this 600,000 number gets determined. But a lot of manufacturers, the way they fill those jobs is they create relationships with training institutions directly. So they've started to create a pipeline because they know there's a shortage in some sectors. So they're not even advertising. They're just kind of pulling them straight from graduation straight into jobs. And apprenticeship programs, other programs help them sort of manage their workflow a little better from a talent standpoint.
And Kelly, on the point of apprenticeships and internships, I mean, how are you seeing those things as potential ways to help?
Well, CPCC has a 25-year history with, for example, workplace learning, focusing on cooperative learning classes, internships to try to teach people real-life skills and give them opportunity to experience and practice those skills before they re-career. One of the challenges that we know when someone is going into a new career, which is often necessitated by the lack of availability from the old jobs that one might have had, is that lack of hands-on experience. So we can focus on transferable skills, but we are actively seeking opportunities to give people access to apprenticeship programs, to other workplace initiatives, to create a talent pipeline. So we're working with business and industry at CPCC as well to help the organizations get the right workers, but also help workers get the right jobs.
And I want to put a question to you guys that I put to Senator Haig. I mean, you've kind of laid out how we have this wide swath of professional backgrounds in as far as people who now have been searching for jobs for months or even more than a year. Mm-hmm. A program that would potentially allow you to retrain to become, let's say, a welder or a skilled manufacturer. If you've been working in the banking industry for 20 years, how likely are you to want to take that approach?
It's difficult. We talk with every job seeker when they go through orientation and share kind of the jobs in demand and things like welding. We also share IT positions, healthcare. But, you know, for some people, you know, you're at a point in your career and in your life that you can't take a year off to go back to school. You've got mortgages. You've got kids in college. And you are hoping, you know, you run the numbers in your head that it maybe tomorrow I'll get that job back in the industry I was at. And so people delay making some of those changes until they might already be a year unemployed. Then they're starting to say, well, maybe it is time to re-career and go into another industry.
And Kelly, are you seeing similar things?
Absolutely. And I know that a lot of people who have come out of jobs from which they were displaced, use that as an opportunity to regroup and identify what they really do want to be doing. So as Steve pointed out, it may be a hardship, but I've spoken with many, many financial services workers who are looking at life differently now and saying, I really want to do something more meaningful, or I want to take this opportunity to make a change. So, yes, going into programs like welding, for example, we had another grant that ran this year that we're hoping to re-up very soon. It's called Back to Work. It offered scholarships for opportunities to do manual labor and mechanical-related types of jobs. Those opportunities becoming more available, the funding becoming more available, makes those possibilities more feasible for people who are looking to make a change.
I'd like to bring someone else into the conversation now. We're now joined by Nancy Johnson. She's unemployed for the first time in her professional life, and she's been searching for a new job for about 8 months now. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And so let's start with some background. You have a bachelor's degree from South Carolina State, and then you got your MBA from the University of South Carolina, right?
That's correct.
So what industry did you get into, and how long did you work in it?
Well, when I first graduated with a math degree, I didn't know where I wanted to go. So insurance companies was where I first landed. And I worked for two insurance companies for the first 4 to 5 years of my career. Went back and got my master's at USC, decided to go into risk management, and that's where I've been for the last 20 years.
And you ended up with Duke Energy eventually, right?
Correct.
So how did you end up losing your job?
Well, you know, that wonderful merger with Progress in last year, and one of my job was actually one that was eliminated.
Do you remember much about your last day?
Yes, I do.
Would you be comfortable sharing?
Oh, sure. It was a wonderful day. I actually planned my day, my last day, the way I wanted it to be. I invited a whole bunch of my friends from Duke, many of them from Toastmasters who are listening today. And I wanted to make sure I reached out to them and told them I appreciated them for all the opportunities they gave me to grow. A lot of the skills I'm using while I'm looking for a job, but things I've learned from many of the people here at Duke. My last night before I left, that my last day, I actually ran into Mr. Rogers.
The CEO. Did you actually?
Yes, I did. Ran into him, talking about having an elevator speech ready.
Right.
I literally
perfect
ran
example,
into
huh?
the man the night before my last day.
Good for you, Nancy.
Yeah, and I talked to him and expressed, you know, I told him I had a wonderful career here at Duke. And I told him that my next last day was the next day, and he looked at me puzzled. Because I guess he wondered, where is this conversation going?
Right.
And I told him, I said, I just want to let him know that, you know, I appreciated all the opportunities I had. And he asked me, is this a good thing for you? And I said, with no remorse or, you know, misgivings, I said, "This I'm going to make it a good thing." Because I knew that I had opportunities out there. I had already reached out and connected with people at Charlotte Works and Right Management and, you know, Toastmaster friends I have throughout the, you know, Charlotte and North Carolina area. So I was confident that I was going to go out there and get that new job.
And how old is your daughter?
She's 18.
You've said that, or you told me before that, you know, this is the first time in your career that you've been,
very,
you know, searching. What were the first couple of months like?
You go through, it's like similar to, I don't want to say a death, you go through the grieving period and you wonder, wow, why me? And then you realize, I'm a realist, and so I don't believe in pity parties, so I quickly got through that and realized, okay, now, where am I going to go? So I reached out and I started working with a lot of people at Charlotte Works, and then I started contacting people at Right Management. I'm probably busier now than I have been ever while I was at work.
Really?
I'm doing a lot of volunteer projects, again, because it's important to keep your skills marketable, and I'm very cautious with my time. I'm more cautious now than when I was at work, so I make sure any volunteer job that I'm doing is going to give me skills, it's going to help me get that next job.
And Stephen Kelly, I mean, to that point about, you know, how much effort it takes in this economy now to try to find a job. I mean, how much of a job in itself is searching for a job now?
Yeah, I mean, looking for a job is a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And to Nancy's point, you want to be strategic about it. You just don't want to just fill up the time with busy work. You want to volunteer in things that make sense for your next career move. Mm-hmm. But employers and recruiters will tell you, you know, when you walk into an interview and they ask you, you know, what have you been doing while you are searching for this job, and you say, well, I'm searching for a job, that's not enough anymore. They want to see how you're giving back to the community, how you're keeping your skills relevant, how you're going back to school. So, you know, Nancy's doing all the right things that recruiters and employers tell us they're looking for in candidates.
Absolutely.
And so we've kind of touched on the first couple months. Now that you're getting farther along, I mean, how has your mentality changed? How has what you've been doing changed?
Well, now I am a full-time student at CPCC, thankfully, because of the Reach It program that Kelly, I'm sure, is going to talk about a little later, but I'm split, as I told my daughter, you mentioned Brittany, that, you know, she's saying you're busier now than you were when you had a job. And I explained to her in the simplest way I could, I'm learning how to bake a cake. At the same time, I'm trying to find people to sell that cake to. And I was in business intelligence years ago, and I have very good computer skills, but it's really been challenging, but a good challenge because I'm actually enjoying it on the business intelligence program at CPCC.
And how have you been able to continue paying the bills?
I have a lot of support, family, and I have a brother who's been staying with me, and he's been my real trooper, trying to help out with me, trying to get this new job. So he's been a real great source of support.
And do you mind me asking if you're on unemployment insurance?
Yes.
You do mind me asking, or you're on it?
No, I am on it.
Okay. And do you know, are you still receiving the state benefits?
The state benefits, yes.
I think that this is a good time for us to kind of discuss this upcoming issue for July that's going to be very serious for a lot of people who are in positions that have been out of work, I guess, a little bit longer than you, Nancy, since you're still on state benefits. But as of June 30th, if you're receiving state benefits, you know, nothing really changes for you if you were before that point. But after June 30th, the North Carolina legislature has changed the unemployment insurance system so that benefits have been cut pretty drastically. If you go on unemployment insurance benefits after June 30th, the maximum you can get drops from $535 down to $350 per week, and the amount of time you can get that shortens to 12 to 20 weeks instead of 26 weeks in the old system. So there's one point. I mean, there's going to be, you know, less support out there, essentially, as far as money goes for the unemployed. On top of that, everyone who's receiving federal benefits, meaning the folks who have maxed out their state benefits and are now on the federal ones, typically that happens. The state will cover about 26 weeks of unemployment insurance. Then the federal government typically takes over. Everyone in North Carolina receiving federal benefits will lose those benefits as of June 30th. And that's because the federal government only offers to extend benefits to states who maintain their current levels. So since we as a state have changed our levels, that's a cutoff date. And the most recent estimates from the State Employment Security Commission's website find that about 71,000 North Carolinians could lose their federal benefits in July, just kind of drop of a hat. In Mecklenburg County, there are about 7,000 people who are on federal benefits right now and who potentially would lose those on that date. If you're listening and you're unsure if this affects you, you can find more information about it online or at your local unemployment office. We'll also have more information about this on our website today. But Steve and Kelly, I mean, do you guys see that as something that is, you know, an essential support for folks? Or can you sometimes, are you dipping into savings? Is
absolutely.
It just one less thing?
Yeah. Absolutely. People have been relying on those unemployment benefits to get them over the hump. But to your point, many people have tapped out their 401ks. They have cashed in all of their savings, looking at delaying retirement now because they're having to live off of what they had even before unemployment might be cut. So, you know, if we're facing new changes in those numbers, it's going to create a great hardship. Every day we've been talking for the last 3 years with people who have difficulty making the mortgage payments, people who are having difficulty buying food, mm-hmm. and people who are having difficulty even coming to coaching sessions because they can't afford to pay for the gas to get to our center. So economic hardship is a huge impact of this status, or being either or underemployed.
It adds another layer to the stress of a job seeker. I mean, at the end of the day, you're transferring the costs of this program from unemployment insurance to a lot of the social safety net, but either at the county level or some nonprofits. So, you know, you're going to see an uptick in calls probably to crisis assistance and some of the other support networks in town. A lot of those folks, though, here, you know, the 7,000 Mecklenburg, a lot of them are already looking for a job. I mean, there is this belief.
Well, that's part of the requirement, too.
Yeah,
I mean, we should say here,
it.
You cannot get benefits unless you prove that you were currently searching.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know many job seekers that are saying, I'm living the good life now that I'm on unemployment benefits, because it is based on what your salary was. So even though 500 plus was about the cap per week, most folks, if you were working at Duke or Bank of America, you know, that maybe covers your mortgage payment for the month, but that's about it. It wasn't something that you were trying to do in lieu of looking for a job. So I think it just puts another thing of where you're going to spend some of your time. Instead of looking for a job, you're going to be looking how to fill the gap of some of those dollars.
And Nancy, you said that you know, you've been getting support from your brother. Have you had to tap in much to your savings or those
yes,
kinds
I
of
have.
Things?
But it's a gamble. With me, as I told my daughter, you have to do a short-term cost for a long-term benefit.
And I mean, for you, I mean, how much of your savings have you had to go through?
Quite a bit, more so than I would have liked.
Well, so as far as this search, though, I mean, as you've been applying for jobs, what are some of the things that you've heard back?
Often you hear just what you just heard, nothing.
Silence.
You know, the wonderful way, when I first got a job, you went eyeball to eyeball to a recruiter who took an active interest in you and was able to tell you quickly. My first job was in New York, so I can tell you from there, it's nothing like beating the pavement in the streets of New York in the summertime. So it wasn't that I've never aggressively had to look for a job or had gotten turned down, But at least you were able to see people and people were able to respond. You knew where you stood. Now, oftentimes, because of the new computer age that we're in, you apply for jobs online and you hear nothing. You don't know if it's because they didn't get it. You don't know if it's because you were under or overqualified. You hear nothing. You hear no feedback. And I think that's the worst thing you can do is, as people get more desperate for jobs, is not give them at least a feedback or some sense of what can they do to regroup, retrain, what can they do with their resumes, what did they do incorrectly with the interviews. You know, you just got to be able to give people some kind of feedback.
We had a caller earlier. He's off the line now, but he wanted to ask about age being a factor potentially in having difficulties getting back to work. I mean, do you think that you've had this long, successful career. Do you think that some of your experience is potentially working against you?
I hope not. You hear so many different things because, you know, they tell you, don't put your dates on your resume. Put your dates on your resume because you don't want to show gaps. You know, bottom line is, do you have a problem that needs to be solved? Do you need a worker who is aggressively curious and has no problems solving those problems? The thing is getting in the right audience, speaking to the right people. I think if you can get in the ear of the hiring manager as opposed to the computer or the recruiter, you'd have more success. But oftentimes you don't know who those hiring managers are.
And Stephen Kelly, from what you guys have seen, I mean, are there cases where having a long, successful career now when you have this huge job pool and you have younger people and older people in a huge mix, can that be something that works against job applicants?
Well, a lot of people are experiencing the challenge of convincing a potential employer that even though they're overqualified, that they will stick with the employer, that they're not going to run and try to find the next best job when they can get another opportunity that will pay more. So I think that's more of a challenge is getting a chance when you are overqualified. But, you know, our data show from whom the folks that we've worked with over the last few years, 39% of the folks that we've worked with are 50 years of age or older. The average age of our unemployed workers is about 46, and some of them go down to the ages of early 20s, some of them a little bit higher. But this is a challenge that's really hitting all age groups and is not necessarily targeting the over 50 crowd the way our public dialogue might lead us to think. It's an equal opportunity impact.
And I might add, you know, people are not comfortable talking about themselves and selling themselves. And in today's economy, you really have to know how to sell yourself. You have to know what your value proposition you bring to an employer. You have, you know, this elevator speech concept that you never know who you're going to run into. And then you had, you know, 30 to 60 seconds need to kind of convey why you want that job, because spending your time during the day while you're unemployed just applying for any job is the surest way not to get one.
Absolutely.
You don't want to mistake busyness for productivity. And
so working hard, not working smart.
And so, you know, having that focus, making sure you're focused on the jobs you actually want and are passionate about is how you're going to get that job.
So you guys, though, just to kind of recap this, you guys are seeing that is more important than, say, what your age is. The different ages are still finding jobs. There's a mix.
Passion, enthusiasm, and demonstrating the experience and tying your experience to the employer. That's how you get success.
We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on long-term unemployment. This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Pest Management, serving families and their businesses for four generations, offering the environmentally responsible Centricon system as part of a six-point protection plan. Details at carolinapest.com. And Queen's University of Charlotte, offering 19 graduate programs, including a master's in communication and an executive MBA. Info sessions June 11th and 12th. Details at queens.edu. Coming up in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's 2 hours of news roundup by Diane. A panel of journalists will join her for an analysis of the week's top stories. In the first hour, the national hour, it'll include a secret order to scrutinize phone records from Verizon, two women being named to key national security posts, and the May jobs report. Then at 11 o'clock, it's the international hour. The Diane Rehm Show and the news roundup starting at 10 here on 90.7 WFAE. Author Judy Blume amassed adoring fans with stories about real kids and their families.
I think that all those kids who grew up on my books think that I must have been the world's greatest parent, and of course I wasn't. I was as imperfect as any parent.
Judy Blume talks about parenting, writing, and her first movie adaptation today on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR News source.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk. We've been discussing a stubborn and significant problem facing the local and national economy, long-term unemployment. In the studio with me is Steve Partridge, CEO of Charlotte Works, Kelly Cochran, Senior Career Coach at CPCC's Recareering Services, and Nancy Johnson, who's been searching for work about 8 months now. Nancy, I want to start here. We've kind of touched on before the break how there's, you know, the attitude is a huge part of it, but then on top of that, retraining yourself. So, I mean, what are the things that you're doing to show that you have skills that are up to date or new skills?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm actively doing projects. I've just finished one project that gave me the opportunity to learn geomapping. I never worked with that tool for that particular project. I'm getting ready to document what lessons learned and finish that one. But while I was doing my presentation for that one, I was asked to get involved in yet another project, and this one was on a website. Don't know anything about website design, but they saw the skill sets that I used for that previous project, and so I'm getting to learn a little bit about websites and what it gets involved in getting a tool and getting the thing, I guess, planned and designed and then finally tested. So, yeah, getting involved and being in the business intelligence program at CPCC has been great because it gets your mind engaged on taking the label off what you've done in the past. Yes, I've had risk management skills for 20 years, but it's not risk management that defines what I do and what I can do in the future. It's actually those little things that I do to analyze a problem and do problem solving, team building, and all of that. So you separate what your skills are and then try to retool yourself.
On that program, it's called Reach IT, and you've mentioned it earlier, and Kelly is very intimately involved with it. It came from the largest federal grant that Central Piedmont Community College has ever received. And I guess, help me if this is a good baseline definition. Basically, it's a program to train people for jobs in different IT fields. Like, Nancy, you're doing it for business. And Nancy, you had a great description of this when we talked the other day. It's kind of like teaching you to talk IT to the IT people, business to the business people, and then you can kind of be the bridge in between.
Well said, well said. And just to give a little more background on where the grant came from, it's a Department of Labor initiative with the objective being primarily to provide the skills that will enable American workers to more effectively compete for those high-skilled jobs that have been alluded to earlier in this program, the skills gaps, where the employers are looking for IT, business intelligence skills, technical support skills, for which there are no skilled workers. So this initiative is designed to provide the training to help our under- and unemployed people be qualified to actually, to compete for those types of jobs.
And how long has this program been in place?
It was awarded to us last April of 2012. The first classes got off the ground in September and October of 2012. And since then, we have aggressively and very carefully screened over close to 1,000 applicants, but have accepted about 175.
Wow.
About 150 into the program.
And has there been enough time yet to see, if these people are landing jobs when they're coming out of the program?
We are having some success in job landing. For example, the first business intelligence class, the one that Nancy's participating in, it wrapped up in April, and in just this short 6-week period, we've already gained a 50% job landing rate for those graduates. Half of the class, specifically more than half of the class, has already found jobs in that field. So it is, it's producing the results that we are certainly have been hoping for.
And Nancy, when will your program end?
My program ends at the end of August.
Okay. As far as, the idea of how part of this problem is also kind of turning into what kind of job are you going to find? Okay, because at times we have, these people who have these big or successful backgrounds, and then they're searching for jobs, and they can't find the ideal job, so you take, say, a part-time job, say you become underemployed. How much of an issue are you guys seeing with that?
I mean, underemployment's huge. I mean, we have a lot of folks that do what's necessary to pay the bills, and they take jobs at Starbucks, they take jobs anywhere they can to pay the bills. And we're seeing a lot of project-based work, within the corporate sector. Rather than bring on a full-time position, they truncate the work and do a six-month project. So we see someone come in Charlotte Works, they land a project-based work, disappear for 6 months, and then show back up at the end of the project looking again. The goal for most folks, though, I call them the reluctant entrepreneurs, that they realize the project-based work may be somewhat the way within the industry they're working, but they all want to get back to that full-time employment because often the health care and other benefits go along with that.
I was doing some analysis of our data. In the first 2 years of our center being opened, about 79% of our participants were unemployed, 21% were underemployed, and now we're tracking a much different number. About 67% of the participants are identifying as unemployed, with 33 at underemployed. So we're seeing a steady incline towards people coming to us, because not because they don't have a job, but because the jobs they have are not meeting their financial needs, not providing the benefits, and not giving them the long-term security they're seeking.
So I guess this is part of how you're seeing the recovery play out
in this
population.
Absolutely. I think it's an under-discussed issue. I think we're seeing some happy news in the employment numbers and the unemployment rate dropping, but it's kind of shadowing the fact that many of the people who are working at a subpar income level and don't have the security they did at one time.
Well, and to that point, so I mean, this morning we heard that the national unemployment rate is now 7.6%. It's been around that for the past couple of months, 7.5, 7.6, in that kind of area. But these underemployed folks, these people taking part-time jobs, these aren't really things that show up in the numbers, right? I mean, this is a story that's not being told in those kind of releases.
Absolutely. It's sustained economic hardships that people are experiencing. They're just not, it's not showing up quite to the same extent that that unemployment did.
Right. And I think it's the misalignment. I mean, a lot of people do more research on their new car than their new career or where to go back to school sometimes. And so we didn't do a much better job as a nation at the local level of sharing that information, that business intelligence of what employers really are looking for. Because if you ask the average unemployed person when they first roll out of their job what their skills are, they're going to talk a lot about what they did at their previous employer.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really understand what their skills are. So we need to help people assess their skills, figure out what they can actually do, then show them how they connect to the in-demand jobs in that marketplace. And a lot of times it takes a lot more time and resources to work one-on-one with someone. And this is at a time of great demand when federal dollars are shrinking to pay for a lot of these programs. So it does tax the system. And in Charlotte Works, we use a lot of volunteers, because if we had to pay for all the services we offer, I'm not sure we could do as much.
And Nancy, you've been through Charlotte Works as well, correct?
Oh, yes. Great program. And a lot of good information for those who are out there looking for jobs or think they may be out of a job soon. I would encourage them to touch base. And before you get to the program part where you lose your job, it's better to start that process and getting to know what programs are out there in Charlotte. And there are quite a bit of programs. You just have to be curious and inquisitive and reach out.
I'd like to take a call from Michael. Michael, you're on the air. Welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Well, thank you. I currently work in Lenoir, but 2 years ago, I had to close my medical practice, which was a small business itself, and went looking for another opportunity and ended up 70 miles from my home in a very nice position. But the first point I wanted to offer was to your guest, and that was when you met your CEO on the night before you departed, did you ask him for a reference letter? I think people underestimate the influence of a letter of recommendation from your supervisors. This is another thing that people can overlook when they leave a company on good terms.
Michael, thank you for the call. Nancy, is that something that you thought of in that moment?
No, unfortunately, I did not think about asking Mr. Rogers for a letter. So, Jim, if you're listening, it's too late.
Well, there's another thing that I want to bring up here that the New York Times has reported on as a relatively new wrinkle in this long-term unemployment problem. The Times has found that some unemployed people who got behind on paying their bills work up bad credit scores. You know, you need help paying, you're borrowing more money. And then some employers are starting to use credit scores more often to screen job applicants. So I guess, first of all, Nancy, have you had problems with credit since losing your job?
Not many changed since I've lost my job, no.
And Steve, have you seen this problem play out for some of the folks through Charlotte Works?
We haven't heard specific examples of that being the direct cause of not getting a position. But clearly, you know, what we tell someone if that's a concern, because some industries, you know, when you work in the financial service sector, they're going to run background checks because you're dealing with large sums of money often. And to be honest with people during the interview process, don't hide it. Don't, you know, address it head on. You know, whether it's you got back and lost your house, you maxed out a credit card and got behind in payments, or even in some situations that we deal with a wide range of populations that may have some criminal offense in their background. And you always want to be honest and upfront and practice how you're going to address it. Because in most situations, if you explain it, you know, you're talking to another person at that point, and you know, either something might have happened in your youth or something that just got outside your control that you can explain off when you get that face-to-face.
And if there's ever been a period in history where some blips in one's credit rating or background is going to be excused and or understood or accepted by an employer, potential employer, this is the time because it's impacted so many people. So I think that that's a good piece of advice, to be upfront about it and don't be ashamed of it. Another point, too, is how one goes about looking for a job. The most successful way, we all know, to engage in job search this day is to be proactive in your networking, to not rely on the job boards, to look for connections and get to know people. And when you do that, when you get to know the hiring managers and the people inside companies that can influence hiring decisions, you're better able then to build the relationships, get that credibility, and set a sense of responsibility for yourself and comfort level with yourself so that people are willing to overlook some of those credit blips.
Yeah, I think to the caller's point, you know, letters of reference go a long way. You know someone, you've got great references. Because you had a problem with the credit a few years ago, I think there's other issues would overcome it.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy, in the you know, the variety of different things you've been doing as you've been searching for jobs, I mean, how much has not only networking but figuring out, you know, different ways to network been a part of the equation for you?
Well, I'm fortunate. I'd never stopped networking from day one. I have creative ways of networking. I've mentioned Toastmasters. It's an organization I'm very active in. And the good thing about that, and I tell a lot of people I meet who are unemployed, if you want to get involved and get to know corporations from the inside out, get involved in the Toastmasters. A lot of these corporations, people don't know, the unspoken volume is there. A lot of these corporations have Toastmaster clubs. You might not get past HR or security, but if you contact them and reach out, you can go and visit a club. And those people sitting around the table are people who are employed at those corporations.
And for folks who are unfamiliar with Toastmasters, in like a sentence or two, what exactly is that club?
It is the world's largest public speaking and leadership organization. It's been around for 80-some-odd years.
You know, we're now a couple of years out from the bottom of the recession. I mean, we have been recovering, but it's been slow. Do you guys see progress in the folks that you are serving? I mean, we've talked about the shift towards underemployment, but I mean, just, you know, all three of you guys, I mean, do you guys see a lot of progress from where we were a couple years ago?
Yeah, I think the fact that we are getting some shortages actually speaks to the point that, you know, businesses are creating jobs. It just sometimes the jobs come before we've had a chance to retool folks. And people are, you know, getting back to work faster. You know, it used to be there was a large group we'd see at Charlotte Works and you'd see them there for some time. And now one day they're gone and we don't want to see people hanging out a lot of Charlotte Works. We want them to get back to work quickly. So we're seeing progress. I know our numbers don't always reflect that, but there's a lot of factors. Net in migration from other states. Charlotte's a hot market right now. People want to live here. And so as many jobs as we're creating, the Chamber's working to bring to Charlotte, it's not keeping up with the pace of people moving in.
Right. And what does it mean, you know, for our area, for our local economy, to have so many people who are just stuck in these job searches and not earning income for so long?
It's a drain on the economy. These are not only a drain on the social services. You go through a lot of stages, as Nancy talked about, but when you start to hitting the multi-year time frame, depression, other things start to factor in that now, even if a job was available, you may rule yourself out because you come across as desperate for a position. And it is a drain on our society as a whole, but in Charlotte, we know we need to do more.
Many of the people who have been through these long-term job search experiences have rebounded. They've, you know, gotten part-time jobs or even full-time jobs that have already been eliminated again and are back seeing us for the second time. So, sustaining that energy and managing, you know, optimism and depression, I think that's a real challenge. It's having an impact on, in a trickle-down way, on not just the economy, but on the mental health of the people involved and families, too.
And, you know, you brought up that your average age, I mean, it's closer to 50 than it is to 40, say, and that's true for a lot of folks. So, I mean, also, what does it mean for that, you know, swath of the unemployed who, you know, would have been not too far off of retirement before the downturn and now, you know, don't have much income or are searching for jobs? I mean, how much of an impact, you know, heading forward can that be for us?
I think, you know, we've been redefining what retirement means for a lot of years, and I think it used to be that 65 to 67 was, I'm looking forward to that. I think a lot of people will find that retirement means something very different as they've tapped into their 401ks and have to sustain work a lot longer than they expected to.
Which is one of the reasons why focusing a new career on something that you do enjoy doing, something for which your passions are ignited, you're going to have more energy to devote to the job search. You're certainly going to have more energy to continue working.
And you know, Nancy, first of all, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And you know, kind of briefly, what do you want other people to take away from your experience?
Well, it's never too late to regroup and retool, reach out and find the support that you need. But don't sit in your home and just get in front of a computer looking for a job. There are resources out there. Kelly and Steve and a lot of opportunity. There are a lot of people out there like them out there. Just reach out and touch.
Well, Nancy Johnson, again, thank you so much for being here. Steve Partridge, CEO of Charlotte Works, thank you. And Kelly Cochran, Senior Career Coach at CPCC's Rehearing Services, thank you as well.
Thank you, Michael.
I'd also like to thank Charlotte Talks executive producer Alexia Girodi for putting this show together.